Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the New Books Podcast. I am Deidre Tyler, host, and today we'll be talking with Joseph H. Holland, author of Make Your Own History, Timeless Truths from Black American Trailblazers. How are you doing today?
I am doing great, and I am so excited to be on your podcast and have the opportunity to talk about my new book.
Thank you for being here. Can you start by giving us a few words about yourself and how you got started on this project?
I have been passionate about writing since I was an English major at Cornell University many years ago. Went on to law school and started some work based on my commitment to both being a community-based professional as well as being committed to Christian ministry. And so I moved, even though I wasn't from Harlem, I moved to Harlem after finishing Harvard Law School and set up my own practice. And I was able to strike the balance between running my practice, being involved in outreach work through my church, as well as creative work with writing. Written plays, had two professionally produced plays here in New York City. But then I got into what I call nonfiction self-help writing, and that's been my commitment over the past couple of decades. And this is my sixth book. The reason I'm so excited about it is that it combines my passion for reaching out, helping people, making a difference in people's lives with my passion for history. Because I, in addition to being an English major in college, I was also a history major, and I went on and got my master's in history and have been interested in African American history in particular. And this book blends my passion for Black history with my passion to reach out and help people.
Now, you gave the reader your history-driven success principles. How did working with the homeless shelters give you an understanding about people's problems? Tell us about that.
When I came to Harlem, this was in the 1980s, I came with a desire to make a difference. And unfortunately, there were some extreme problems because of the crack cocaine epidemic. There were a lot of people outside on the street, and I ended up, making a decision. It was a tough one to start a homeless shelter in order to take people off the street and not only give them food, clothing, and shelter, but also put them on a new pathway to transform their lives. And so I call it holistic housing. And as a result of that commitment, I began to explore ways of reaching them, encouraging them, motivating them, inspiring them. And I found that history and historical role models were one of the important tools, because so many of our role models in history have overcome challenges and major challenges. And it was by identifying, such people and sharing them with residents of the shelter that I was able, to touch a chord that would get them going. One quick example I'll share you know, a homeless man named Harvey, who, you know, just didn't have the motivation to get going and get up and go to work. And that was, you know, one of the requirements of being at the shelter, where you needed to, you know, seek work and get yourself back on your feet. And there was a historical figure. He's in my book. He's a trailblazer of industriousness. His name is William Johnson. And, you know, he was a slave. But because he had a work ethic and he started training as a barber, and he was able, you know, to start, you know, working as a barber, and he worked so hard, he was able to make enough money and buy his freedom. And he ended up prospering to the point where he had his own barbershop, other businesses, and even invested in real estate. And so when I shared that example with Harvey, he had never really thought about history in that way before. And he was, he was touched by it. And it was one of those motivating factors that inspired him to, go back to school. He got his GED, he got some other training, and he was able get some work and get his own place to stay. So I learned from that, and that's just one example, that historical role models can indeed have inspirational impact. And that was one of the, you know, reflections. Of course, it was many years later when I started thinking about writing Make Your Own History, but that was one of the reflections that said, hey, bringing history and self-help together can indeed make a difference.
Now, you made a very important observation. You noticed that many of the people that you work with through your ministry or as a lawyer or government official, minister, or community-based entrepreneur, you notice that they had a missing in their lives virtue. So tell us about that.
I decided to write what I call a book about virtues-driven success. Living by principles and values, what I call virtues-driven success, is really the key. And that's why I organize the book in 12 chapters based on virtues. And so it starts with courage, so that there are 10 trailblazers of courage, and then trailblazers of self-discipline, of compassion, of perseverance, of teamwork, of integrity, of industriousness. And then I go on with trailblazers of self-reliance, optimism, purposefulness, civility, and I end with trailblazers of faith. Those are the 12 chapters. And there are 10 role models, historical and contemporary figures in each chapter that exemplify those 12 virtues. And the reason this is so important is because I want the reader to understand it's not just about what this historical or contemporary figure did. It's how they did it. It's how they lived their lives. It's the principles that they applied in order to overcome whatever obstacles, barriers, whether it was personal or institutional, to attain history-making success. So it's the virtues-driven lifestyle that I want the reader to understand from the past and then draw those life lessons to apply in the present. So under those virtues, you have, yes, the historical role model, but you also then have success principles that flow from that role model's life. And that's what brings the virtues to life.
Okay, let's start with courage. Tell us about some of those role models and what you learned from them.
I love one of the early ones. There are 10 role models there. And the second one in the book is, his name is Robert Smalls. And Robert Smalls, this is in the first half of the 19th century. He was a slave in South Carolina. And of course he had a rough way to go. But he was able in, you know, his spare time to do some work on the South Carolina docks in Charleston, which was an active port. And so he learned to do some works on some of the ships that were coming in there. And so when the Civil War broke out in 1861, because of some of the skill sets that he had picked up, one of the Confederate ship captains decided to, hey, this is a slave who can really help our cause because, you know, he knows some of the skills that we need for our ship. And so he was brought on and really became an assistant, a right hand to the captain of the ship. So one of the principles that is an enduring theme, throughout the book is strategy. It's called your victory is in your strategy. And so Robert Smalls had a strategy. He wanted to be free. He wanted some of his fellow slaves to be free and family members. And so he decided that one night when the slaves were left on the ship, the white captain and crew members went home and the slaves were left to safeguard the ship. He dressed up like the captain and wore a hat like the captain. He got his fellow crew members to dress in similar ways, like the crew, white crew. And he went out from the harbor, went to another stop and picked up their family members. And he took the ship out of the harbor. And because of his skill in navigating the ship, he was able to impersonate the captain and make the soldiers at the various checkpoints think that he was the Confederate ship captain, and he was able to navigate the ship out of the Charleston Harbor all the way. And it wasn't until the last checkpoint where they noticed that something was amiss. By then, it was too late. Robert Smalls had navigated himself, his crew members, and their families to freedom, and that's why he's a trailblazer of courage. And I entitle his chapter "Dare to Do Great Things," because he had the courage to do that. And my favorite success principle under Robert Smalls is test the waters. Because there are times when we cannot make progress, personal progress in our own lives, unless we're willing to venture out. beyond the safe harbors of our life and into those deep waters, into those unknown territories. But that's where destiny awaits for us, out in those deep waters. And so Smalls represents that, and that's the principle that we can learn from him.
Now, the second principle, self-discipline. You had so many great role models, but share one with us.
That's one of my favorite of virtues, self-discipline, because that's really a key to success. If you're not able to discipline yourself and, you know, do what at first may be challenging, but I call it short-term pain for long-term gain, because the discipline is about developing those positive habits and getting to the point where you're then able to do this new habit, second nature, and that becomes the driving force on your success journey. And my favorite role model here, I have to say, is a family member, my own father, who was a trailblazer in a number of ways. And I have to pause when I talk about him, because it goes back to my childhood and what I learned from him and what I saw from him. I mean, he was, you know, the first African-American football player at Cornell University in the 1930s. And he became an All-American football player there. But because of the color line in professional sports at that era, it didn't break until Jackie Robinson did it in baseball at the end of the 1940s, even though my dad, his name is Jerome Holland, was a two-time All-American football player. He couldn't play professional football. But he was disciplined enough, even through that disappointment, where he stayed in school, got his master's in sociology from Cornell, and then eventually was able to obtain his PhD in sociology from the University of Pennsylvania, and then was able to move from teaching into college administration and became president of two HBCUs, Delaware State University and then Hampton University. And he continued to trailblaze, because after he finished his educational journey, leadership journey, he was named United States Ambassador to Sweden, one of the first African-American ambassadors to be named an ambassador to a non-African, non-Caribbean country, but only the second to a European country when he was named ambassador to Sweden. And then after his diplomatic service, he continued to trailblaze and became the first Black member of the board of the New York Stock Exchange. So I give that trailblazing history because, you know, he has been an inspiration to me since I was a boy. But then it was easy for me when I started writing this book to select him as a trailblazer of self-discipline, because I remember, when I was growing up, experiencing that self-discipline firsthand, even though he was many years, when I was a boy, beyond his athletic career, he would get up, he would exercise, he would go out for his jog. He would not only discipline himself in those ways, but you know, also you know, professionally, and that's why he was able to attain success in so many different sectors of his career. That inspirational role model, as you could probably tell, I've talked about it longer than I did the first one, just because there's so much personal meaning for me there.
Absolutely. What a great life. Now, you also talked about perseverance. What were some of the role models and information you gained there?
Yes, perseverance is, once again, so key to success. It is, you know, I'd have to say that not giving up, that keeping going, no matter what's going on in your life, but making a decision that, no, I'm not going to give up until I make it to my destination. Because I write about these role models in chronological order in these various chapters, right? So the first trailblazer of discipline goes back to the 1700s. His name is Alode Equino. He was born in Africa. And he was captured and became a victim of the transatlantic slave trade, and came across in the Middle Passage in the mid 1700s. And he was able to make it through that awful, horrible experience. And he ended up in the grind of plantation life in the South. But then he was able, you know, to work for his freedom. And then he realized that it was important for him to tell his story, but he couldn't get any support for, you know, writing the story. And then once he had written, publishing the story here in the United States, but he didn't give up. He did not. He ended up going to London, England. And in 1789, he published his autobiography. It was entitled "The Interesting Narrative of the Life of Alode Equino," and it was the first influential slave narrative, and it had so much impact that it led and helped to build momentum for the abolitionist movement in England, and it led to the breakthrough legislation. You know, less than 20 years after he published the book, but England abolished the slave trade, not only in Great Britain, but in its colonies. And Equino's book was seen as a contributing factor there. So he's one of the trailblazers of perseverance, but I quickly want to highlight another one. And this woman, Bessie Coleman, she grew up in the late 19th century South in Texas, and wanted an education, wanted to go to college, but couldn't afford it. Her parents couldn't afford it. And so she had a moment. She heard some World War I pilots talking about flying planes and what aviation really meant. And it was in that moment that she decided, that's what I really want to do. And she knew she had to get out of the South, but she moved. So she moved to Chicago, and she wanted to, you know, study aviation there. She was working two jobs. She ended up, she didn't give up because she couldn't get the training there. She ended up going to Paris, France. And there she became the first Black woman to get an aviation pilot's license, and came back and really became a celebrity known as Queen Bess, because she started doing flight shows all across the United States. And the success principle there that I want to highlight, there are, you know, several of them for Bessie Coleman in the book, but the first one is listen for direction, because she wasn't going anywhere in her life until she heard a conversation, and it was then that she became focused. She embraced the dream of becoming an aviator, learning how to fly, and she kept at it and kept going for it until she had attained her dream. And so what I tell my readers is you have to declare to yourself, I will keep going for it. I would just keep going for it, and I will find that pathway to attain my destiny.
Now you talk about integrity, trailblazers of integrity. Give us some examples.
My favorite there, she really, really stands out for me, Lena Horne. She was a famous entertainer, you know, singer. This was in the mid-20th century. I mean, she rose to fame in the 1940s and the 1950s, had albums, successful albums, was on TV. It was really, you know, quite a celebrity. But it was, as her career was taking off, she was selected, this was during World War II, to give concerts to the U.S. troops. And she would travel. It was the USO who sponsored these concerts. And so she would travel to give these concerts in order to encourage the men who were serving in the military. But then she discovered in certain venues that the Black troops would be seated in the back. And so you would have the white troops, and in some venues, you would have the white soldiers and then white American soldiers. Then you would even have the German or the European soldiers that were a part of the war effort, you know, seated. And then the Black soldiers were in the back. And when she saw that, that's why her entry is entitled Refuse to Take the Stage, because that's exactly what she did. She had enough integrity to say, no, this is wrong. I might have traveled thousands of miles. I'm here to serve, but this isn't right. And because you have a segregated audience, you know, troops who are part of the armed forces, who are forced to sit together way in the back, and they're the same color as me, but yet they're being discriminated against. No, I'm going to stand against that. And so she refused to take the stage when she saw that the values of the organization that was sponsoring her were different from her own. And she took the position, I am not going to compromise. That is not an option. Racial groups, especially my own people, need to be treated fairly. And so she's a role model of standing on the importance of fairness.
Then you went on to industrialness. Give us some of the examples you'd like to share there.
Industriousness is such a key because work ethic and having that work ethic is so key to success. And there are some noteworthy role models here. Mary Ellen Pleasant is one that I'd like to talk about. She's what I call an unsung hero. There's another trailblazer of industriousness. Her name is Madam C.J. Walker, and she's more well known. There's been a movie made about her. She was the first, it had nothing to do with her race, self-made woman millionaire because of her hair care product line. So I talk about I write about Madam C.J. Walker, but Mary Ellen Pleasant is someone that I'd like to highlight because of her amazing story. Yes, she was born a slave, but she was able to get her freedom. This was in the 1840s, and when the California Gold Rush started, countless people moved to the West Coast because of the Gold Rush, and she was one of them. And Mary Ellen Pleasant was a fair-skinned Black woman, and so she was able to get a job in a restaurant in California because she was passing as white. She was being, I call it, savvy in her work, shrewd in her work. And in this well-to-do establishment, she was able to do her job and serve the customers of the restaurant, but she listened. And as she was serving, she was hearing businessmen talk about their work, their investments, their strategies for making money. And so she was able to save her tips and begin to make investments of her own. She was able to buy restaurants as well as laundries and boarding houses, dairies, and she even invested in a Wells Fargo Bank. And she became so successful as a businesswoman that she was able to help fund what became known as the Underground Railroad of the West Coast. And she got the reputation of the Harriet Tubman of California. Harriet Tubman is a well-known abolitionist. She was a conductor of the Underground Railroad on the East Coast, and she was able to lead many slaves to freedom. Mary Ellen Pleasant, because of her success as a businesswoman, was able to use those resources in order to fund the passage from slavery to freedom of many on the West Coast. And I talked about strategy before, and with Mary Ellen Pleasant, one of the her victory was in her strategy. And one of the principles there is move with strategy. She didn't have a formal education, but she was able to be studious, to listen, to draw lessons, and to become savvy in her work. And that led to victory, not only for herself financially, but also it led to the freedom of so many others.
Self-reliance. Tell us about those role models.
Well, there are two who really stand out, for me here. Elizabeth Freeman, she was, and this is in the late 1700s, a slave in Massachusetts. And after the Declaration of Independence in 1776, and Massachusetts was one of the first states to change its state constitution with language that talked about all men being created equal. Mary Ellen Pleasant, who was she wasn't a literate slave, but she was in the home of her master. And once again, those listening skills, she heard a conversation her master had brought some people into the house to talk about this new constitution. And she heard the language and she was, created equal. That language applies to me. So she made it her mission, right? That's why she's a trailblazer of self-reliance. She wasn't looking at anybody else, but she made it her calling to see that this law that she heard about would apply to her first and foremost, and then to her people. And so she was able to get a lawyer, to bring a litigation about the application of this constitution to her and Black people in Massachusetts. And she gained her freedom several years later. And then because of her work, Massachusetts became the first state in the United States to abolish slavery. And so she, it's because she decided that, hey, I'm going to take this matter in my own hands. You know, she made such a tremendous difference for herself and others. And the other trailblazer, self-reliance, I am really inspired by is Oscar Michaud. And I entitle his entry Uplift Yourself and Others because he had a very challenging upbringing. He was, and this was at the turn of the 20th century. He had to leave home as a boy. He was in the Midwest. As a teenager, he was living in Chicago on his own. He had to work as a waiter in the stockyards, in the steel mills. And he decided, I'm going to have a shine stand. And so he started shining shoes as well. He did well enough where he was able to move out of Chicago and, you know, buy some farmland, and he actually became a homesteader. But he decided, because he had a passion for writing, and he had heard about this new industry called films, movies that was just starting to move forward in the 1910s and 1920s. And so, you know, he wrote his own story. It was called The Story of a Negro Pioneer, and then The Homesteader. And he made, from his own story, a silent black and white movie. The first black American to make a feature film. And then he took off from there and made both silent and sound movies, a total of 44 throughout his career. And his success principle that strikes me, I wrote about, is called be self-assured. You know, having a strong enough self-image and self-confidence that no matter what else is there, you can be self-reliant and you can make your dream happen. And that's how he was able to uplift himself and fulfill his dream.
Trailblazers of optimism. You had many, but tell us about a few.
Yes, there are some really special ones here. And I want to start with Matthew Henson. You know, he was someone who he's known for being the first one. He was an explorer and he discovered the North Pole. But he was able, because of his dream, he had a dream. He didn't start doing this, but he had a dream that I'm going to make it. I'm going to be the first one. And he joined with other explorers. And over time, it was at least a dozen trips that they had to make. He was the first one to make it to the North Pole. And then great athlete Wilma Rudolph. She had childhood illnesses. You know, she suffered from polio so much that one of her doctors told her she would never walk again, and she had to wear a leg brace until she was 12 years old. But she had a dream for greatness, and she kept at it, kept training. And in the 1956 Olympics, she won a bronze medal. And in the 1960 Olympics, she became the first American woman to win 3 gold medals. She was a sprinter, and she won, I think, the 100 meter, 200 meter, and then a relay, but the first American woman to win 3 gold medals. So she made history because she didn't give up on her dream.
Trailblazers of purposefulness. Tell us about those individuals.
Yeah, there's several that I want to quickly highlight here. William Wells Brown, slave, born on a plantation. He was able to escape slavery and had a passion for telling his story, for writing. And so he, in 1952, he published a novel, and it was the first novel written by a black American. And he was then able to continue writing and wrote some history books about African Americans, how they made a difference during the Civil War. And then I love the story of Arturo Schomburg. His is entitled Plan to Build Heritage. because he was an immigrant. He was in Puerto Rico, and one of his teachers told him when he was a boy that you don't need to study about your history, because the history of Black people is meaningless. And when he immigrated to New York City, that stayed with him, and he began collecting Black history. And his collection became so voluminous and so significant that in 1926, when the New York City Public Library wanted to establish a branch in Harlem that was dedicated to Black history, they actually bought his collection for $10,000, which was a lot of money at the time, and used that as the basis for this new branch. It was later named the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture, and it continues to this day as a landmark in Harlem and the center of cultural activity. But the last trailblazer of purposefulness that I want to quickly highlight is a contemporary trailblazer. Her name is Misty Copeland. Once again, had to overcome a challenging upbringing. She was in Los Angeles. There was extreme poverty, and at one point, her family had to live in a rundown motel room. But she was purposeful in her desire to become a dancer. And so she practiced endlessly every day and was able to move into that as her career. And in 2015, when she was 32 years old, Misty Copeland became the first Black American woman to become the principal dancer in the American Ballet Theater, which had been around 75 years, but had not had a black American woman as principal dancer until Misty Copeland did it eight years ago.
Trailblazers of civility. There were many, but which ones are your favorites?
It starts with a figure who may be familiar to some, Crispus Attucks, who was a slave. This was back in the 1700s. But when the Boston Massacre broke out in Boston in 1770, a crowd of Bostonians confronted a British sentry of troops, and they began to fire their arms at these people. And Attucks was the first. He was the first person who was killed in what became the American Revolution. And it's such an important message because, you know, the fact that the first person killed in the American Revolution was a person of color, you know, that speaks volumes about, you know, what is at the heart of the, you know, American character. And if, you know, different races died together right at the beginning of the establishment of America, then my point about Crispus Attucks is that, you know, we have to, in carrying on his legacy, people of different races, we have to not only get along, but we have to work together if America is going to be the country that the ideals of America were were designed to make us. And then to the civil rights era, right? Because one thing about my book is that it crosses the generations, right? You know, it goes back to the beginning of this nation and all the way to the present. And so in the 1950s in Little Rock, Arkansas, there was a student, Black woman, teenager, Elizabeth Epford, and she wanted to go to school. And there was an order based on Brown versus Board of Education, a U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1954, that she had the right to attend Little Rock High School. But there were protests, and the protests were so massive and severe that troops had to be called in order to protect these students and get them into the classroom at Little Rock High School. What's significant about Elizabeth Epford is that one of those white students who was protesting against her, her name is Hazel Masary, she and Elizabeth Epford, years later, developed a friendship. And this was, yeah, it had to be 40 years later. They appeared together in Arkansas at a racial reconciliation rally. And so I talk about, you know, the principle here is don't give way to hating. No matter what has been done, refuse to reciprocate. And civility means that you can learn to reconcile, even with those who have felt like your enemies, that, you know, the virtue of civility means that you look beyond that and you find ways that you can come together with that person.
Now, you end the book with the trailblazers of faith. Who were your favorites?
It's important to note here that I end the book with faith, because faith, for me, is the most important virtue, that you have to believe. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in others. You have to believe in God. No matter what the obstacles, the barriers, if your faith is strong enough, you can indeed make it. The example of Harriet Tubman, I mentioned her before, you know, but she was so special because of the work that she did on the Underground Railroads. And I give an account. It was one account where she was leading some slaves out of the South on the way north, and they hit a town, and the safe house that they were supposed to stay in had been discovered. And so they couldn't go there. So all she knew to do under those circumstances was go to the river where there was a swamp with some weeds there, and to hide. And she and the slaves who were escaping in those high weeds, and she prayed and believed God. And a while later, there was a man. He was, you know, dressed as a Quaker. He showed up and he said to them, you know, there's a wagon in the yard not far from here. The horse is in the stable. And then he disappeared. Night fell, and under the security of darkness, Harriet and her group, they went, they found the carriage and the horse, and they were able to make their way out of that town to the next town on the Underground Railroad on their way to freedom. It is indeed a miraculous journey. But that's what happens when, you know, we exercise the virtue of faith, that things that ordinarily would not make sense or would be too much to handle, but they become possible and they manifest because of our faith. There are a lot of other trailblazers I can point to on the faith journey, but I like to go right there because there is a miraculous power that manifests on our behalf when we really and deeply and powerfully hold on to our faith.
Now, what is the overall message you want the reader to leave with once they finish your book?
It is important to live a virtues-driven life. If we live out the virtues that are highlighted in each chapter of my book, and I went through them before, and of course, as we've talked about it, I pulled trailblazers from each of these virtues. Leading a virtues-driven life will bring about the success that we seek.
Well, I've taken up enough of your time. Can you tell us the next project you'll be working on?
It's something that always, there are always a lot of ideas floating in my head. I'm already developing what I call companion curriculum for this book, Make Your Own History, because I didn't write it specifically for young people, but this book has such a power of application for our youth, and you know I'd like for it to be used in schools in a way where not only the knowledge of these historical figures can be available, but there can be application of these success principles, which will forge pathways of success for our young people. And so I am actively working on that, and it will soon be available.
Well, we will be looking forward to that. And again, we've been talking with Joseph H. Holland, author of Make Your Own History. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it, and I appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts with you today.